just when you thought Christmas was over and we've got all the decorations down and we're back to green vestments, we get this gospel. I mean, this year is the third year of the church's cycle. We're supposed to be in the Gospel of Luke for most of this year in ordinary time. But we've got something from John. You see, in the liturgy of the church, particularly in the antiphons used in the Psalms and the liturgy of the hours, and in the hymnody of the church, Christmas and Epiphany and the baptism of the Lord and Cana all sort of get thrown together. There's even one antiphon for Epiphany that manages to get all four in the lead-in to one of the Psalms. So I think we need to reflect at least a little somewhat on why this gospel is here. To begin with, there's something missing. It's not in the text as they gave it to us in the lectionary, but if you look at the actual Gospel of John, the text says, on the third day, there was a wedding at Cana in Galilee. Now, you would have had to be not paying attention not to hear echoes of the creed in that on the third day. And Pope Benedict, in his fabulous three-part book on Jesus of Nazareth, points out, he says, third day is used as a flag. It is a trigger. You know, we know Jesus was raised on the third day. And we know in the book of Exodus, when the children of Israel had prepared to meet God, that it says, on the third day, Moses went up to the mountain, and the mountain was covered with smoke and lightning and fire. So Benedict tells us that this third day is intended to be a flag for us, a trigger that something special is about to happen. God is going to be manifest. It is a theophany in the fancy theological word. Well, it's a simple enough theophany. It starts out, they're all at a wedding. The couple are certainly neighbors of Jesus and Mary, and they're part of Galilee. They may even be distant kinsfolk of Jesus and Mary. And they had the embarrassing thing happen. The wine runs out. That's a really hard thing, you know. I still have in my game room tubs full of soft drinks and other stuff that we bought at Costco for my daughter's wedding in October, and we haven't gotten rid of them all. We didn't want to run out. They run out of wine, and so she just simply comes to Jesus and says, they have no wine. And Jesus turns to her with this odd expression. He says, woman, how does your concern affect me? My hour is not yet come. Well, in the Gospel of John, Mary appears in two places, here at Cana in Galilee, and at the end, at the foot of the cross with John. And at the foot of the cross, Jesus says, woman, behold your son. Here, woman, how does your concern affect me? And by that use of that phrase, which to us sounds cold, but it's very significant in ancient Middle Eastern culture, he is expressing respect for her and tying her to the woman par excellence in the Jewish scripture, the woman with Adam, the one who is the mother of all the living, the one by whose temptation we find ourselves in the situation we're in. So John has knit together all of those occurrences in that one word. And Jesus says to her, my hour is not yet come. See, Jesus' mission is to do the will of the Father, and he's focused on doing that will. He's pointing in particular with intensity to what he calls his hour. If you read the stories and the passages in John about the Last Supper, he's talking about his hour, the passion, the cross, the death, the blood and the water, and the rising again. What he says is entering into his glory. Yet Jesus responds to Mary's matter-of-fact trust. He's willing to begin the process now at this wedding. So the wedding becomes, in some sense, an anticipation of Jesus's hour. In fact, the gospel ends with an explicit acknowledgement of that. It says, "He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples began to believe in him." The wedding is a foretaste, a manifestation of what happens in the glorification on the cross. Just as the Eucharist for us anticipates the completion, the fulfillment of the hour that happened on the cross when the Lord comes again. Water becomes wine. Law becomes grace, as John says in his prologue. And the superabundance of wine is like the miracle of the loaves and fishes. It is a symbol of the messianic superabundance that the Jews talked about. In the time of the Messiah, it will snow food and rain drink, they would say. Wine in every culture, particularly wine at a wedding, means joy. It is celebration. In the first reading we hear, "No more shall you, people call you forsaken or your land desolate, but you shall be my delight and your land espoused. For the Lord delights in you and makes your land his spouse. And as a young man marries a virgin, your builder shall marry you. And as a bridegroom rejoices in his bride, so shall your God rejoice in you." God rejoices over his people as a bridegroom does over his bride. Marriage is above all for us an image of God's love for the church and the communion of God with us, sanctified by Christ in this miracle. The scriptures describe heaven as a wedding banquet, and the Eucharist is for us a foretaste, a peek into the wedding banquet. We are called to come to that banquet. So let us imitate, first of all, Mary's simple faith. First of all, the servers came to Mary rather than approach Jesus. So let us take the time to ask Mary to help us go to Jesus with our needs. And in that simple, straightforward assurance that Mary had that Jesus would take care of it, let us go to him with Mary and present our needs to him. That is one of the core lessons of this gospel, that we can go to Jesus in simple faith and ask Mary and all the saints to accompany us, to help us enter into that manifestation. It's also another very important thing that we need to look at to do in this gospel. Mary turns to the servers after speaking to Jesus, and she very simply says, "Do whatever he tells you." That's good advice for us every day of our lives. Praise be Jesus Christ.